Hello and welcome to the Physical Preparation Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Robertson, and I'll be joined on the line later today by Fergus Connolly. Now, before we jump into this week's show, I want to get you guys caught up on the last week's goings, if you will. The weekend was super solid. Really nice to just have, you know, a day and a half, 2 days where I could chill out and relax a little bit. Workouts have been going exceedingly well. So I'm enjoying kind of just getting back to savage mode a little bit in the gym. Now, don't get it twisted. When I say savage mode, the weights are not anything to write home about, but I think savage mode is more of just like a mindset to be in and starting to push myself a little bit more. So hopefully in the next 3-4 months, I'll start having something to write home about, and I'll try and throw some training footage out there if there's something worth noting. So yeah, the weekend was great. This week is starting the whirlwind that is the holiday season. You know, I'm just kind of looking ahead a little bit to the calendar, and I think my wife and or I and or both of us have something pretty much every night this week. Stuff this weekend. I think we got 4 things on Saturday alone, and then that's pretty much status quo for the rest of the month. So, you know, with that being said, I don't know about you. Sometimes I look at that calendar and stress and anxiety goes up a little bit. So I will just tell you this. I always try and bang out, you know, a couple deep breaths. It's been clutch for me, but bang out a couple deep breaths. Don't be busy just to be busy. You know, take those breaths, pause, reflect, and just recognize the fact that, hey man, this is like one of the best times of year. A lot of times we get to see friends, family members, loved ones that we wouldn't normally get to see. So take advantage of that, man. Enjoy that extra time that you have with them. Don't feel stressed. Don't feel anxious. Put the phone away. Have a beer, glass of wine, glass of milk if you're underage. You know, whatever the case may be. And just sit back, relax, and enjoy this time of year. Because I don't know about you, but personally, this is like one of my favorite times of the year. I absolutely love it. So before we get into this show with Fergus, I want to riff on something just a little bit. And something that I've been striving for a lot. Not just in my life, but, you know, with regards to my businesses as well. And I think one thing that we should always be striving to do in our lives is to simplify. And I think it was Stuart McMillan talked about this years ago, and I probably referenced this a couple times now. But in one of his Altus lectures, he's talking about when you start off as a coach, everything is simple, right? Because your model is simple. You don't know a lot. But as you learn, as you grow, as you evolve, as you accumulate information, what happens is you tend to make your model, your coaching, your programming more and more complex, right? And eventually it reaches this apex, at which point you're like, man, why am I making this so freaking complicated? And you start to whittle it back away. So if you think of it kind of as a bell curve, you know, you get to the top of the bell curve and then you're like, man, this is just way more complicated than it needs to be. And then you start whittling down and simplifying, right? And this is something that, well, number one, I've always tried to do in my life, or at least over the last year. In fact, I even put up in my newsletter earlier this week about an article I wrote from last year and how one of my main goals for 2018 was to simplify. And I think in 2019, it's to simplify even more. But this is something that we've done a ton, both at IFAST and RTS over the last year. So like, right now, we're totally retooling our assessment process. This is something at IFAST, that may be one of the things that we're most well known for in the fitness industry is we give a really good assessment. We have a really good idea of, you know, diving in and figuring out what's working well and what's not working well. But at the same time, we have to meet our clients and our athletes where they're at. So it doesn't matter if we've got them lying on a table for 60 minutes, if they walk out of there feeling like a physical therapy patient and not an athlete or a client, then we've probably done something wrong. So we've actually tried to strip down and really figure out, okay, what are the most important things we need in our assessment process to deliver a great program to our clients and athletes? So that's one example. A second example would be your training menu or your progressions and regressions. And this is something that if you followed me for any extended period of time, I have beaten the drum on this time and time and time again. I bet I've been talking about progressions and regressions for no less than 8 to 10 years now. And now I'm looking at some of these menus and they're like 30 progressions and regressions deep. Look, I mean, that's fantastic. That's fantastic that you put that much time and energy into that. But then I would question, like, how often are you actually using all those? So it's not something that you necessarily need to answer, but it's like, start to whittle away at your own processes and say, look, have I made some of these systems or some of these procedures and things that I'm working on, have I made them too complex? Another one is coaching cues. And this is really relevant because if a cue goes over a client's head, then you've totally lost on a great opportunity to teach that client or athlete something about their movement skill or their movement quality. So this is something where people probably laugh. Like if they would see me coach, they're like, oh, wow, this guy uses like the same 10 cues all the time. Or, you know, oh, his stuff is so basic. It's like one or two words. But like, that's the point. If I have to give a one paragraph monologue to get somebody to change something in their workout, then after about the first five words, they've already tuned me out. So this is a challenge for you guys, you know, not just maybe in your coaching game, but in your life. Figure out ways, or maybe start by looking at areas that are too complex, right? Where there's too many rules. And then start to really challenge yourself and say, hey, look, you know, have I made this too complex? Can I start to whittle this down? Is there extra stuff in here that I don't need to be successful? And so I'm always looking at it from that 80-20, 90-10 rule. If it's not in the 80 to 90% of stuff that's going to make a huge or massive impact with my clients, with my athletes, with my business, then chances are it's not going to stick in there too much longer. So that's my challenge for you guys. Try and figure out ways where you can simplify and streamline your own lives. You know, and again, it could be in your life, in your business, in your coaching practice. It doesn't matter. But I guarantee if you do this and you take it seriously, chances are everything is going to be more clear. You're going to have less stress. You're going to have less anxiety. And ultimately, you're going to get far better results. So guys, enough from me. Give me just a second and we'll get into the show with Fergus. I don't know about you, but with the new year approaching, I'm definitely thinking about how I can take my body to the next level in 2019. And one thing I've mentioned on this show numerous times is the role and value of having a coach. I know that whenever I have someone coaching me, I tend to work harder, I have more accountability, and ultimately, I get better results. So if you're interested in working with me as your coach next year, I have two potential ways we can do this. Number one is my RTS online coaching platform. In this program, you'll work with me directly to carve out a training program that is specific to your unique needs and goals. Every month, you'll get an updated workout to make sure the program is challenging, and we'll communicate back and forth to make sure your technique is on point and that you're making progress each and every month. A second option would be my annual training group. In this program, we go through 4 3-month phases of training: building the engine, leaning season, athletic domination, and stronger. But the cool part of this program is that it's more than just a training program. Every month, you'll not only get a new workout to follow, but we'll also set monthly challenges where we develop habits with regards to nutrition, recovery, and mindset to help ensure that next year is your best year ever. If you're interested in online coaching, you can learn more at robertsontrainingsystems.com/coaching. And if you're interested in the annual training group, you can learn more at robertsontrainingsystems.com/annual. And if you have any questions whatsoever, feel free to email me directly at mike@robertsontrainingsystems.com, and I'll try to point you in the right direction. Regardless of which option you might choose, I'd love the chance to work with you next year and help make 2019 your best year ever. Fergus Connolly is one of the world's leading experts in team sports and human performance, and he is the only coach to work full-time in every major league around the world. Fergus has served as Director of Elite Performance for the San Francisco 49ers, Sports Science Director with the Welsh Rugby Union, and Director of Football Operations for University of Michigan Football. In this show, Fergus and I discuss why his overarching philosophy is winning, and what that really means, how he's found success across multiple sports and cultures, and 3 consistent themes he's found which surround successful teams. This is just a really fantastic show, and I sincerely hope you enjoy it. But enough from me, let's do this. Burgess, man. Thanks so much for coming on the show here today. Really excited to chat with you a little bit. Could you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Mike, thanks for having me on. I'm delighted. I know we spoke about a week or so ago, but my background is quite varied. I've been fortunate to work as a strength coach initially, sports scientist, performance director across quite a few sports, soccer, NFL, rugby, college football, professional boxing, a little bit in the military. And I've been really fortunate to have quite a bit of experience around the world. If I haven't given away by now, I'm Irish. And currently, I'm doing a lot of mentoring with performance directors and coaches. I guess graduating to, you know, trying to help the next generation coming through.
Yeah.
And, try and take up where perhaps the Mike Boyles that we spoke about before, you know, have done, and try and pass on some of those, lessons and things I've been fortunate to learn from others.
Yeah, I love it, man. And what originally led you to the world of physical preparation? How did you get started?
I think, like all of us, I think, you know, you're fascinated by heroes. A good friend of mine, Angus Reid, wrote a book recently called Thank You, Coach. And he speaks, you know, very accurately about the influence of heroes and icons as we're growing up. So as you're growing up as a young kid in Ireland or wherever, you know, sporting heroes are the ones that you look to earliest, fascinated by sport, played sport. And I also grew up in a house where, books were always present.
Yep.
And we had encyclopedias. So you would go and, you know, study or try and figure out how to get better at something. And so even while I was playing sport, you know, if I wasn't strong, I would try and find weight training books in the library. Or if I wasn't fast, I would try and find, sprinting books or whatever it might be. So when I, you know, got various injuries, I would try and study stretching. So I think just a really inquisitive mind combined with just loving sport.
And, yep.
And sport just teaches you so much, I think, about life. And when I finished playing, I all I wanted to do really was coach kids and help the youth. And I, while I was at university, I would travel to visit different coaches to try and learn from them. And somewhere along that line, I got offered a job, and I was teaching at the time, lecturing. I left that, and I thought, okay, I'll take a small career break and just see how, you know, just do this for a year or two and then go back coaching. And I've never gone back coaching. There's probably a school somewhere looking for me in Ireland. But no, this is just my passion. It's my hobby that I happen to get paid for.
Yeah, I love that.
It's I've been really fortunate in the industry. The industry's been good to me.
So I'm a little bit nervous to ask you this, more so than others, because I know they've only had one or two jobs. You are prolific over your career. Would you mind maybe just highlighting some of the stops that you've had along the way? Because I think you're really unique in the fact that you've been literally across the globe, across multiple sports. And I know people would love to kind of hear that story from you a little bit.
Well, I think what people really find interesting when they ask me about my background is that originally I trained as a woodwork construction studies teacher. My father was a teacher, and I didn't think that there was a career in sport, like at that time in the early 80s. So my plan was, let's become a teacher, and then I can do this part-time. And when I went to university, I had my degree done very young, just before I was 21. So I figured, well, I'm young enough, let's stay on and do a master. So I stayed on. I did a master's in manufacturing, advanced manufacturing technology. And I thought, you know, for another 3 years, I can get a PhD. So I did a PhD in computer optimization. But all the time, my passion was sport. And I still denied to myself that there was any career in sport. And I would just use all of my free time to study, read, visit sports people. Like I said, it was my passion. And when I would visit, I visited a Premier League team, Bolton Wanderers in England. They had a turnover in staff just as I was visiting them. And because of my, I guess, technology background combined with my, you know, self-taught knowledge in sports science, they needed someone. And they said, look, would you be interested in a role with us? And I went straight back and took a career break. And I started in the English Premier League. I was fortunate. I worked then in, with the Welsh Rugby Union. I consulted then for you know, teams like Liverpool, Harlequins Rugby in England, all in England. And then I was asked to consult for some NFL teams because at that time, sports science was just in its infancy. Yep. There were no full-time sports scientists really. And I guess I came into the industry at the right time with, you know, just a bundle of enthusiasm and fascination with trying to understand how to make, you know, how to make athletes better and how you could help teams win. And, you know, I consulted for the Browns, the Jaguars, Falcons, and then the 49ers. And the Niners ended up offering me a job, worked with the San Francisco 49ers with Jim Harbaugh, then came with them to Michigan. And, you know, I've consulted then for, so various military units and even in Australia with even cricket in Australia, worked with professional boxers. Now, like I said, I'm mentoring. I hesitate to use the word because it almost has the image of a grandfather, grandfatherly figure, but it's I truly get the most enjoyment from helping, you know, seeing, helping developing coaches and helping coaches on their journey. You know, it's that's what gives me the most happiness.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start with what may be a simple, but definitely not an easy question. You've obviously worked with all these different teams, all these different sports. What would you describe as kind of your overarching philosophy when it comes to physical preparation or athletic development?
In one word, it's winning. And that what I mean by that is, like, you know, what's your definition of a win? Because to everybody, it's a little bit different. So it, to me, it's helping somebody be the best that they can be. Because the one thing that is I'm absolutely certain of is that your only real competition is yourself. So even in team sport, you have an opponent, but are you performing better each time? And when it comes to, you know, physical preparation and athletic development, it's about, you know, getting better all of the time consistently. And it's trying to help athletes and coaches find, first of all, find the limiting factor, what's holding the athlete back, and helping them identify that and then fix it. Because I think far too often we get into a routine of simply doing the same thing, you know, day in, day out, or week in, week out. So really helping, you know, the athletes, the coaches and athletes see what's the limiting factor. I use the image of a fuse board. If people even today know what a fuse board is, but if you've got a series of fuses, you know, or you go into your apartment and the lights are off, sometimes it's just about finding that one fuse to flick, and then all the lights come on. So think of it in terms of an athlete. Sometimes it might be something as simple as helping identify a mobility issue, and then all of a sudden the athlete gets stronger, gets faster, whatever. But it's not just a case of if the athlete's slow, just sprint more.
Right.
It's, you know, what's the limiting factor? Let's just take a step back, fix it, and just helping people find those answers. But again, yeah, it's, you know, it's not just about making people better. It's about making better people as well, you know, because what we do in sport is to prepare young people for life, you know, teach them lessons through sport. And that's important, you know, how to overcome challenges, you know, how to work hard, how to be, you know, diligent and responsible. So I don't think there's anything better we could be doing.
No, I agree. And I want to circle back on something you said, because I mean, I couldn't agree more that trying to find, I would describe it as like the rate limiter, you know, finding that rate limiter in the process. You know, how do you even start that process? Because, I mean, again, when you're thinking there's so many factors that influence performance, where do you even begin to start peeling back that onion?
It's a great question. One of the things that, you know, working across different sports is challenging because every time you move to a new sport, it's a completely new environment, new culture and everything. But the one thing that I noticed very early on was that there are essentially, and this is a very simplified model, but there are four elements, you know, and I've only worked in team sports. I've not worked with Olympic athletes. So bear in mind, I'm speaking from a team sport perspective, but you've got the tactical element, you know, a player's game sense. Their game knowledge, how they play the game, their technical element, the skill, and you've got the psychological component, and then you've got the physical. And, you know, coming up in the industry, everything I was taught was physical. We knew that there was a brain, but, you know, we didn't really worry about it too much. And the challenge, I think, for us now is to look at the athlete as a, in a holistic manner and to recognize that not everything can be solved initially in the weight room. And it's just pausing, looking at the athlete as a whole and recognizing, okay, where can we improve the athlete? And in team sport, you know, I've used the phrase time and time again, start with the game and work backwards. And I think that we can learn a lot by watching the athlete play the sport. And it's interesting in, I first noticed it in rugby because during a rugby game, the strength coach will take the substitutes from the bench and take them down behind the goal, and they will continuously warm up during the game, and then they'll come back and they'll sit down for a bit, and maybe maybe they're split in two groups. So the strength coach doesn't get to watch the game. The following day, he's doing recovery or he's training players who didn't travel. So the end result is the strength coach, the guy who probably spends more time with the players all of the time, doesn't actually watch the game and certainly doesn't watch it with the coaches. And that's just in rugby. It's very common across a lot of sports.
Yep.
And that has changed, you know, over the last, maybe only over the last 15 years, because initially the strength coach was, you know, side by side with the football coaches and was really closely related, really closely involved. So it's just, I think, a function of the industry that we've become separated quite a bit from the sport. So taking time to watch the game is the very first step, and watch the athlete move, you know, watch their mobility, watch their speed, watch their reaction, watch their fatigue levels in the sport, not just in, you know, in just in physical training alone.
I love that. So you kind of mentioned this in the previous point, so I want to come back to that as well. And one thing that's fascinating about you is that you have worked across all these different team sports. It's something that I've done on an individual level, but you doing it at the team level is even more impressive. So with that being said, how do you go about learning the culture of a sport before you start working with a new club?
This is a great question, and I don't get asked it a lot, but it's arguably the most important lesson, I think, for young coaches coming up. Initially, when I went from rugby to soccer, I was overwhelmed. I was struggling because as a young kid, you watch, you know, it's like anybody watching the NFL on TV week in, week out. And then suddenly the next morning you're in the industry. What you don't realize is how intricate each sport is. So even though I was familiar with it, I'm working in it and just all the nuances. And it's very, very uncomfortable when you move from one sport to the other. That's why not many people do it. Yep. However, it's the greatest learning experience you can have because you move out of your comfort zone. And to answer your question specifically, the very first thing is to be aware, to have good common sense and to be aware and to soak up everything. Sometimes people come into a sport or into an organization and they've got their, it's not a vision, it's a drive, and they push forward and they don't respect the sport, respect the vision, respect the culture perhaps of the country, respect the culture of the environment, and they miss all of these small little clues that are needed. And you need to buy time. So be aware, use humor, be polite, watch how others do things. And obviously you do your homework before you go to any team. And I'll tell you this story because my very first days at Bolton Wanderers, we have a team photo. So I've only been there 2 or 3 days. Team photo, we all go down to the stadium. It's going to be in the stadium. I'm in the locker room. My gear is left out. So, you know, I get on my gear, but I have no football boots. And I look around and somebody says, "What's wrong?" And I go, "I have no boots." And the goalkeeping coach, I won't name him, he goes, "Oh, grab the, what size are you?" And I said, "Oh, you know, whatever, 9 or whatever that is in US." And he said, "Hey, take these." And he threw them across. I pulled them on. And I ran out onto the field for the team photo. And, you know, it's a big deal. It's with the, just with the staff alone. Yep. So I'm there. And we're waiting. And who are we waiting on? We're waiting on Sammy Lee, who is the head coach. Minutes go by. Sammy comes running out all flustered with white tennis shoes on. Somebody has taken his boots. There was an Irish guy standing in the staff photo who did not put his hand up and say that he might have. And when I get in, of course, I take my boots off, and there's Sammy Lee's name written underneath on the sole of the shoes. So on the very first day, I managed to take the head coach's boots. And in that photo, he is there, and they've positioned 2 footballs in front of his feet so that nobody sees he's not actually wearing boots. So that was a good lesson, you know, be aware. But it's interesting. Something that in the States perhaps people would take for granted is, like, for example, when I worked at Liverpool, you had Spanish players, you had German players, and English players. So you had different languages even being spoken on around the breakfast table. So you have not just the country that you're working in and the staff, but you've got different nationalities, and then you've got the nuances of the sport. So to anybody being thrown into those environments, be humble, be aware, and smile, because a smile will get you a long, long way, just being pleasant in the industry.
That's great advice, man. And kind of along those same lines, when you start with a new club, you know, I'm sure all of us, if we would start with a new club, we've got these massive ideas and things that we want to address or implement. But at the same time, and we kind of talked about this on that thread with the Chelsea coach, you know, even if you get into one of these positions, you can't go in and just start blowing everything up, right? So if you're going into one of these positions, because you've done this numerous times, what do those first few weeks look like for you when you're on a new job? What are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah, another great question. Again, I've never ever gone in and just blown everything up. That just suggests, you know, an arrogance that you know only one way to do things. You know, the sport is the way it is for a very good reason. It runs a particular way. So the two things are, you know, identify the strengths of the program and of the organization. And then look for, you know, if you will, weaknesses or limiting, where are the things that we can improve? I don't particularly like the term low-hanging fruit, but I think that's probably what people would refer to it as. To me, it's where can we make, you know, very effective change efficiently. And it's about adding value to the organization. So one of the key things is to understand, you know, the culture and the environment. And, you know, like I said, with some of the performance directors that I work with, you know, I always tell them to be very conscious of the culture of the organization, because even if you've got a good idea, it has to fit within that environment and the vision that they have. So if you're working with a very traditional organization, you know, you can come in with innovative ideas, but they must be presented in a traditional way. You know, understand, you know, whether it's the ownership, understand the country that you're in and the environment, so that you can ensure that any new ideas that you plant are planted successfully. Again, it doesn't matter how good the seed is. If you don't understand the terrain and the ground, the soil, it's not going to take off. So always respect the strengths of the organization and maximize those. That's the first thing. Preserve those. if you go to work with an NFL team or a college team that have a tradition of and are a very physical team, well, maintain those because that's what has made them good. But if something else is a weakness, perhaps it's, you know, perhaps it's lifestyle or nutrition, well, then let's work on that and fix that. But always preserve the strengths first. You will fail very fast for two reasons. One, if you're not respectful and you're not humble. And two, if you don't maintain the strengths of the athletes or the organization you're working with.
You know, I'm so glad you said that. And again, this Twitter thread, well, when the show comes out, it'll be a couple weeks old. But from the Chelsea coach, obviously got everybody stirred up. And I actually have recorded when this is released, it'll be out already. But, you know, I actually did like a whole episode around it because I had this very kind of like visceral response at first. And my initial thought is, well, this guy's an idiot, right? You know, maybe this guy, he's whatever, he's 60, he's old school. I don't know anything about him, right? And so that was my initial response, which made me question, okay, well, why do I feel that way, right? And starting to get past that emotional response and then start to think, okay, well, look, number one, this guy's had a ton of success, right? Number two, how could I take that and learn from it? So literally, I started writing down, okay, let's put this constraint on myself. You can't use any traditional strength training equipment. You can't use barbells, dumbbells, kettlebells. I could still write a pretty good training program. Is it exactly what I would want? No, but it would be pretty darn good. And I could make it something that I could be pretty darn proud of. So it was just interesting that you said that because it fits into a lot of what we're seeing out there now, you know, and there's so much of this, you know, I do it my way or this is my way versus, you know, trying to find a common middle ground across, you know, there's so many people in the mix now. It's yourself as a strength coach, an ATC, a PT, a sports science, maybe a high performance director, you know, trying to find some collaboration, some common ground that everybody can work from.
Yes, you know, this is it's a great topic because the second part of his statement was we will do strength training, but we won't do weight training. So he wasn't saying that strength isn't important. It was about the technique. And sorry, the other point that has probably been missed in all of this is English isn't his first language. So, you know, just taking phrases out of context as well, like you got to be very, very careful. And, you know, the other thing, having worked in soccer, physical fitness is important, but the one of the most important points about soccer is it's a very technical and tactically dominant sport. So I've been around incredibly strong and fast soccer players, but I've seen more skillful, less fit, but more intelligent players just run circles around them. I've seen fitness coaches come into into soccer teams and try and improve fitness and think that's going to be the key factor. It helps, but it's not the most important factor. And I think U.S. soccer actually would learn a lot from those comments because the importance of skill development is very, very important. One other story was with a team I was with, and this is a true story. We're sitting in the meeting room shortly after we just played Manchester United, and it was a great Manchester United team of young players. And we're waiting for the head coach to come in. And we had at the time Prozone data far before anybody else. Prozone was measured the distances and speeds run by players. It was one of the first teams ever to have it. Because we had an agreement with the company, we also had the opponent's data. And one of the young fitness coaches was commenting on how fit we were and how much further our midfielders ran during the game compared to the opposition. Right. And this older white-haired coach said, you know, mumbled, yes, because we were running around like headless chickens with their players. And that's why we lost 3-1. Yeah. And, you know, the physical fitness is important, but in the totality of the game, in particularly in skill-dominant sports like soccer, it's very rarely going to determine the outcome of the game or be the number one factor. But, you know, to your point and your perspective, I think is probably the one that young strength coaches should take from it is never, ever jump to immediate conclusions. Sit back and ask the questions like you asked, you know, let me just take this and let's just play with this in my mind a little bit before I take an absolute side on it.
Yep.
And that's how you become a good coach. You know, you challenge all of your principles and ideas.
Yeah. And like I said, I think if you have that kind of response to anything in this industry, you know, if something creates that emotional of a response to you, you need to kind of figure out why that is and dig a little bit deeper. Because yes. I think there's a lot of stuff that you can learn in that situation. Zooming out a bit, you've worked, you know, with and for numerous sports organizations over the years. So this is really interesting. I want to hear your thoughts. What are the common threads of the ones that have been successful over the long haul?
There are three themes that I've found common to all really successful, you know, whether it's teams, sporting teams, or even departments. The first one is honesty. And I don't mean that in a, you know, very religious sense. I just mean a brutal honesty of being able to sit around a table and without agenda, ego, just thrash out and find out honestly what is the, you know, what went wrong or what went right and identify that. And I think even on a personal level, being able to be brutally honest with yourself, you know, about what you're doing well or what you're not doing well. Otherwise, you live in a cloud of self-denial and you're not going to get to the bottom of any problem. So good organizations are very honest. And if you've been around them, it is so refreshing because there are no hidden agendas and everybody's in it together. People openly give credit in a meeting or they hold their hand up, not in a, you know, false humility kind of way, but they go, listen, I this thing and I, you know, I got this wrong. And just that openness.
Yep.
And honesty leads to the finding the answers very, very quickly. The second one I just touched on is humility, is being humble enough to know that you've never done learning. You know, I had a, you know, conversation with an NFL head coach yesterday or today. It was like days are rolling into one another, but you know, he was saying we never stop learning. You know, and that is so true. This is a guy who's been in the industry for years. If you're not humble, you're going to get let down very, very quickly. So it's being humble to know that you have a answer that you believe at this point in time is the best answer, but tomorrow morning you might learn something new. Being humble around your players, around your staff, and that humility and honesty, that combination, I think, is what makes very, very good, successful teams. And the last one is hard work. You know, you can't win anything without putting in hard work. And it's about the quality of work, not just work for work. Sometimes get asked, is intelligence not three? And it's not a prerequisite. And what I mean by that is, if you're honest in a group setting about what worked and what didn't work, that's intelligence. You know, I've seen really, really smart people who haven't been humble, who don't want to work hard, who aren't honest, succeed. I think the intelligence is being honest and humble. That's what real intelligence is.
Yeah, no, I love that. Hey, Fergus, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Would you just say that third part about hard work again? You were kind of cutting out a little bit.
The third part about intelligence?
Yeah, just talk about just where you were talking about hard work. The third point being hard work. You could just start with that. Just kind of repeat what you said there.
You know, hard work is a given, but the important thing about hard work is just not work for work's sake. It's about putting in the quality of work. And actually, an important point on that in team sport is that the work must be, you know, very intense quality work in a team sport setting so that there's a very rich learning environment. It's not just about the volume of work. It's about when you're there, putting in very hard quality into intense work and then having time off. And you know, that combination of honesty, humility, and hard work, those three themes have been common to all the great teams that I've been around.
That's awesome. So one thing I definitely want to talk about is your previous book, Game Changer, obviously got amazing reviews, and you've actually got another one on the way. So would you mind telling us a little bit about 59 Lessons, like what it's about and why you chose to write yet another book? Because I know it's quite the undertaking.
With Game Changer, I wanted to, the reason behind Game Changer was that I had worked, like I said, as a strength coach, sports scientist, nutritionist. I'd worked in these different sports. And every time I would go to like a, you know, I maybe talk to an experienced strength coach, they would say, well, you know, and I talk about speed, they'd say, well, strength is the key. And, I'd get my athletes stronger and they might get faster. And then I'd meet a nutritionist and they'd say, no, it's all about diet. And it's all about, so with Game Changer, I wanted to create a model of everything so that young coaches coming through would be aware of everything. And as I was writing Game Changer, all of these small anecdotes and stories and lessons kept coming back to me. And I wanted to put them into Game Changer, but I didn't want to cloud it. And I just scribbled them down, you know, over the years as I was writing it down. And I kept them together. And then I wanted to write a book that would do two things. I wanted to say thank you to all of the coaches, athletes, and mentors that I've had, you know, through my career. And I wanted to pass something on to the next generation of, probably the second generation, I guess, of sports scientists, or maybe the first of sports scientists and young coaches coming through. Because I get emails just like you do, I'm sure, about, you know, well, you had one from me, but even just asking for, you know, what have you done? What have you learned? Who have you learned from? So 59 lessons are 59, you know, morals, stories that I've learned through my career from working with some amazing people and the things that I learned from them. And I wanted to say thank you to them, pass on some of the stories to the next generation, and, you know, show some of the coaches as well coming through that there's more to being successful in this industry than simply, you know, an academic qualification. You know, get off your backside, go and meet someone, you know, make a call. Email's not enough. You've got to go and learn from some great coaches who are out there.
You know, the thing that I really like, I mean, you sent me that kind of like preview version. I just loved the format that you had, because I love books that, you know, start with kind of like a story and give you some insight and then dive a little bit deeper into the theme or the moral behind it. So, man, I can't wait for it to come out. I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah. And the other thing is that, you know, in the book, like, you mean people like, you know, Charles Poliquin and Charlie Francis. You know, there's another guy, Luke Thornley, Jerry Collins, they've all passed on. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, they don't get a chance to, or I don't get a chance to thank them in person any longer. But it was important for me to do that as well, because, you know, our industry, there's some great coaches who have helped both you and I separately over the years. And this is a great industry with some great people. And it's always important, I think, to take the time to thank them, to be grateful, and then in turn pass it on. And, you know, I've been very fortunate over the years. I think there might only be one person who I've ever reached out to who, you know, didn't get back to me or didn't help me. And that's an incredible statement for this industry.
Absolutely. All right, Fergus. So it is big question time. I ask everybody that comes on the show this question. If you could alter the space-time continuum and give young Fergus Connolly one piece of advice about training in or life, what would it be?
Do it all again.
Yeah.
Just do it again. I don't believe in regrets. I think that, I've made lots of mistakes. Unfortunately, people know about some of them, but I think, you know, everything that I've done has been, has been genuine. It's not a case that I think you only ever regret if you did something, insincerely. Everything that I've done has been following my passion. I've been fortunate to meet some great people. I think if anything, the piece of advice I would give to people in the industry is just follow your passion, because, you know, that's what makes you happy. I mean, I left, in my PhD, I was just one of the few people to have done it in that area, yet I walked away from it. And but on the other hand, I became the full-time sports scientist, one of the first to bring sports science and GPS to the States, the NFL, things like that. Just, yeah, do it all again. The most important thing, I think, for people who are passionate in this industry is, remember that if you listen to everybody who had something negative to say or tried to stop you or hold you back, you know, I wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. So just go do it. You know, just go do it. Live, you know, live your passion. I think we're all writing, our own books in a way, which is our life. And, you know, you want to have the richest book possible, professionally and personally. So yeah, just do it all again.
Wow. That was really well stated. We're all writing our own books. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So last but not least, we've got our lightning round, 4 fairly quick questions, but your answer can be as short or as long as you'd like. So number one, what's your career highlight so far as a coach or clinician?
I have 3 text messages from players after I left organizations that mean a lot to me. They're just private text messages. They're thank yous. And in each of the text messages, they recall something that I had actually forgotten that I had done for them. One was helping somebody get a flight home to see their grandmother before they passed away. Like, I mean, they're just anything to do with trophies or winning or anything like that. Those are the highlights. That's those are the only memories I have when I'm on a rocking chair at a nursing home. I'll be happy.
That's awesome. I love that. Number two, you're a prolific writer, but I'm interested. What book or books are you reading right now?
I've just started 2 recommended. Like, one was by Dan Pafney, which is called Wisdom at Work, and Mike Boyle recommended another one to me called Delivering Happiness. 2 great books. And the third one that I'm dipping into from time to time, which people will not expect, but it's The Complete Works of Thomas Aquinas.
Okay.
One particular group I'm working with, we're doing quite a lot of work on vision and understanding one's identity and purpose and how that helps them maintain balance in extreme situations. And that's why I'm studying that.
I love it, man. That's very cool. So number 3, something else as I was, kind of coming up with the questions and where I wanted to take this, something I'm passionate about is giving back and trying to make the world a little bit better place. And I saw you have some philanthropic efforts as well. Would you mind sharing what those are?
Yes. So one of our coaches who was at the University of Michigan, he has gone, he's a coach, Biff Poggi. He's a coach with St. Francis Academy in Baltimore, which for those of you who've seen The Wire, it's a school in that neighborhood where there are about 11 kids who are homeless. You know, there's quite a few of them have lost siblings to gun violence. So the odds against this community are stacked against them. And, you know, I went to visit Biff during one of our vacations a few years ago and saw what he was doing with those kids. And, you know, every chance I get, I try and raise awareness for the school, because that is a reminder of what the role of sport in society, you know, originally was intended to help, you know, raise young men and women for life, and teach them lessons that they can bring with them into their professional life and everything. And it's a wonderful example of that. So anything that I can do to help support them, and I'm happy to. And there's a brilliant story in 59 Lessons about those kids.
That's awesome. Very cool. Okay, last but not least, number 4, what's next for Fergus Connolly?
Okay, apart from 3 books I'm writing, I'm getting 59 Lessons out the door. I'm hoping in the next 2 weeks get it out there. I'll be delighted to get. I just want to share those stories with everybody and say thank you to all the different people. I'm busy with my performance directors, mentoring them. I've got a syllabus. I'm not sure whether I'll actually publish it as a book, but I've got a series of manuals that I'm working on. And I've got another book called The Process, which is taking the game changer principles and use that as the structure for an applied book. So taking those principles and applying it to football, to college. And it's not just college, it's high school, college, and pro. So one of the key elements is in how to develop young players, you know, the whole way through the system, look at them holistically, physically, mentally, tactically, technically, I wrote that with Cam Jossi, who works with Joe DeFranco, and
yeah.
It's been a wonderful project, and he's been a huge help, you know, putting the book together. And there are a lot of things in the book that actually most of it is completely new. It's just a completely new way to look at developing some of these things, and new is good, because it, just like you said about the Chelsea coach Sarri, if the only thing that my book's writings do are make people think differently, then it's a success.
Yep.
The worst thing you can do is produce something that doesn't make people think.
I love that. I love it. Well, Fergus, you've been awesome today, my friend. It's been really good chatting with you. Where can my listeners find out more about you and what you have going on?
Well, check out my website, fergusconley.com, and on Twitter. And I'll be posting, sending out some extracts of 59 Lessons, which you can find on 59lessons.com.
Love it. Love it. Well, Fergus, thanks again for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Mike, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right, guys, that does it for this week's show with Fergus. Sincerely hope you enjoyed it. I know I had a great time catching up with him. And he's one of those guys, I think, I don't know if it's the travel, working across multiple sports, but he's just got such a great perspective on how to be successful within our industry. So again, sincerely hope you enjoyed it. If you did, I would love it if you could go out in any way, shape, or form, help promote the show, whether it's sharing it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, any of those would be fantastic. If you're not subscribed, you could hit that little subscribe button. Make sure you get this every week in your inbox. Or if you're already subscribed, if you're already sharing it, if you go onto iTunes, take literally 2 minutes, give me a review, let me know what you like, because every review, every rating helps drive up the traffic, and it helps people know who we are and what we're trying to do over here. So again, thank you guys so much for your support. Always love and appreciate it. And we'll be back soon with our next episode. Take care.